Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The former site of the Blue Heron paper mill in Oregon City erupted in a 3-alarm fire Saturday afternoon. The Clackamas Fire District reported the fire broke out at approximately 2:06 p.m. The first crews on the scene reported heavy black smoke from a large abandoned commercial building at the south end of the mill property, which is located in downtown Oregon City near Willamette Falls. Firefighters worked to locate the blaze, ventilate the structure, and attempt a search. The fire was quickly upgraded to a second and third alarm, bringing in additional firefighting resources. Fire conditions soon changed, causing structural instability of the building and extremely high interior temperatures. This forced firefighters to exit and begin defensive fire operations from outside the building. Several trucks with large aerial ladders and waterways were positioned around the building to spray water from above to extinguish the fire while keeping firefighters in a safe location. Firefighters were forced to stretch hose lines across 99E and the railroad tracks to access additional hydrants. Both the highway and railroad tracks were closed Saturday afternoon while crews were on the scene. On Sunday, Oregon City Police announced a man had been arrested and was facing arson charges in connection with the blaze. Enrique Omar Mejia, 29, faces second-degree counts of arson, criminal trespass, and disorderly conduct. Oregon City Police said they had been called to the scene Saturday after a witness reported observing someone throwing items from a window of a building at the mill before the fire started. Officers responded and also observed furniture being thrown from an upstairs window, the Oregon City Police Department said. A short time later, officers then observed smoke coming from the same window which items were being thrown. Police formed a perimeter while Clackamas Fire and other agencies responded to extinguish the fire. Mejia was located within the police perimeter and detained without incident. Mejia was lodged at the Clackamas County Jail, where he remained as of Sunday morning. His bail is set at $13,000. The 23-acre Blue Heron paper mill site closed in 2011. Clackamas Fire staged training exercises at the site in 2017. It has also been used as the location for the television series Grimm and stood in for the Grisham Mill in the 2008 film Twilight. Last year, the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde finalized a deal to buy the property, which lies at the heart of their ancestral tribal lands. They said in 2019 September, they were working with Metro and Oregon City on plans for a river walkway and a pedestrian plaza with views of the falls. There were also efforts underway to repair and reopen the Willamette Falls locks. For photos, find the story on our website, canbyfirst.com. The Canby Police Department is investigating a spat of what officials described as gang-style graffiti that was reported in multiple areas, including private residences, throughout Canby on Friday. The incidents all of which appeared to have occurred Thursday night or early the following morning, were reported on South Elm Street, Southwest 4th Street, South Knott, and South Oak Place, according to KAMI Police Chief Brett Smith. Somebody, or some group, kind of went crazy, Chief Smith told Now Hear This KAMI. This is pretty unique to KAMI. We haven't had anything like this happen for quite a while. The graffiti was found on a variety of surfaces, including walls, shop doors, fences, and even a decorative stone wall marking the entrance to Township Village. KAMI police detectives are still investigating it and are seeking information from anyone who might have witnessed or have video of the suspect or suspects. Smith said it's possible the perpetrators were someone from outside of town who wanted to send a message. But the incidents Thursday night may have not been as isolated as initially believed. After this story was posted, several residents of the KAMI Regency Mobile Home Park shared photos of their similar graffiti that they say had been appearing regularly in their neighborhoods for months. "We have been getting vandalized," said one of the residents, who asked remained anonymous. "There have also been break-ins and things going missing outside." The Oregon Department of Transportation asked for feedback on its deeply unpopular plans to add tolling on Interstate 205 near Oregon City, and, well, you know what they say, be careful what you wish for. More than 4,600 people and organizations from Oregon and Washington submitted comments during the 75-day window, ODOT said, offering input on the project's purpose, proposed tolling scenarios, and means of implementing tolls. A majority of the residents across all demographic groups expressed strong opposition to tolling in general or the specifics of the I-205 toll project, according to an engagement summary released by ODOT last month. ODOT said the feedback illustrated the need for more public engagement to better explain how toll systems work, the benefits realized by tolling, and how decisions will be made. "Clearly, there is more work to do," said Oregon Toll Program Director Lucinda Broussard. "The comments we received from the community demonstrate the confusion around this type of tolling, which makes sense considering this has never been done before in Oregon. The tolling area will include all lanes of I-205 in both directions from Stafford Road to Highway 213, with the actual installation likely to be at the Abernathy Bridge near Oregon City and West Lynn. We've seen at the beginning of other toll projects how community support starts low," Broussard said. "With so many unknowns, it's easy to understand why no one wants to pay more for travel." However, she argued, tolling projects in regions like the Willamette Valley demonstrate that once a toll is implemented, trips improve, travel time goes down, and people start to appreciate and support it. According to ODOT, other benefits from tolls can include a more reliable trip, less stress, and the ability to put money back in the corridor for other transportation improvements. The most frequently mentioned subjects of comments focus on the use of toll revenue, diversion to local streets and lack of fairness in Clackamas County, and effect on unreserved and underrepresented communities. Respondents offered numerous suggestions on how the impact of tolls can be lessened, including toll discounts, improved transit, and maintaining the choice of a toll-free route. "We appreciate all the specific suggestions and will continue to work with the community to create a system that works for us in Oregon," Broussard said. At a presentation in September, ODOT officials told the KAMI City Council that the plans to toll I-205 could spike traffic on Highway 99E through KAMI by as much as 40%. "I'll be honest with you, you're dealing with a community that has a great deal of skepticism as to your real intent," City Council President Tim Dale told the officials at the meeting. "You're dealing with a community that is going to look at your solution, which is to toll 205, as yet another example where Clackamas County is going to bear the cost of funds being diverted to Portland causes. The next steps for the project include conducting a detailed analysis of the benefits and impacts of tolling. The results of this analysis will be published for public review in a draft environmental assessment in 2022. A final decision is expected in 2023. Tolling on I-205 would not begin before 2024. A man from Wallala and one from Clackamas were arrested for attempted theft in the Clackamas Promenade parking lot last week while trying to get a jump start for their getaway car, according to deputies. The Clackamas County Sheriff's Department responded to Coles at 3:30 p.m. November 30th. A loss prevention officer reported seeing a man running out of the store carrying stolen merchandise. A second suspect was seen next to a car. When the first suspect reached the car, it appeared the suspects realized the battery was dead. Deputies later said investigators said the suspects then began asking other people in the parking lot for a jump start for their car. When deputies arrived, the suspects had the hood up on their car and were trying to get a jump. Raymond Allen Stavig, 41 of Mullala, and Derek Richard Benjamin Schertz, 27 of Clackamas, were taken into custody. Deputies said that Schertz stole the items from the store and was also carrying counterfeit $100 bills in his pocket. Additional items recovered from the car were bags of clothing from other stores, several laptops and phones, multiple credit cards with different names, a magnetic card reader and writer, thumb drives, Oregon ID cards, more counterfeit bills, as well as methamphetamine and cocaine, according to deputies. Stavig claimed that all of these items belonged to his wife, police said. He also offered additional explanations, including that one of the credit cards belonged to a friend who let him use it to buy gasoline. Investigators said that the card was later found to have been used by Stavig to buy items at Dick's Sporting Goods and Target that day. It had not been used to purchase fuel. Schertz told deputies that Stavig offered him $1,000 if he were to take blame for everything. Schertz declined. Deputies identified and contacted the owner of a laptop and phone in Stavig's car and learned that those items were in a car that was stolen in Portland. Information about the credit cards allowed deputies to identify 9 victims of identity theft. Stavig was arrested on charges including theft, possession of meth, and a warrant out of Multnomah County for aggravated identity theft. Schertz was arrested on charges of second-degree theft, possession of a forgery instrument, and a warrant out of Crook County for possession of heroin. Known for his flashy passing, Philadelphia 76ers All-Star Benjamin Simmons has a new partner to play fetch with. One of those champion pedigree traces back to our neck of the woods. The lovable acquisition as a product not of the 76ers front office, but rather Noda Bear Newfoundland's, a Canby-based kennel of service and therapy dogs. Bethany Davis, Noda Bear owner and founder, said she was contacted by a representative of Simmons who was looking for a well-bred Newfoundland. I was trying to help him find a Newfie all over the world, but because they are so rare, I couldn't find him anything, Davis said. Simmons, a native Australian and lifelong animal lover, was in the market for a loving new pet and Newfoundlands, which have a reputation as gentle giants for their sweet dispositions and calm natures, seemed to fit the bill. Also, he's nearly 7 feet tall, so he didn't want to have to do a lot of bending to pet. Davis quipped. Despite slotting in a point guard in most lineups, Simmons is indeed listed at 6'10". Though Davis had failed to find an available Newfie pup through her usual network, she happened to know one, much closer to home. We had a litter of one, she recalled. We were going to keep her, but I knew how much Ben was really looking, so I told the finder we would offer her to Ben. Davis started sending Simmons daily photos and videos of the pup and getting to know him better. Before that, I hadn't spoken to Ben personally, she said. This is actually not that unusual for Davis, whose journey in founding Noda Bear is entirely personal. She grew up in the South American jungles of Suriname, the daughter of a mission pilot for Mission Aviation Fellowship. When I got back to the United States, I got culture shock. That turned into anxiety panic disorder, which turned into agoraphobia, she said. I was a shut-in for over 10 years. She eventually had to be hospitalized for a breakdown where a doctor recommended a service dog. Research led her to the Newfoundland breed, though it still took her a couple of years to find her first dog in the Czech Republic, no less. She decided to get into breeding to replace her own service animal, but not all puppies met the rigorous standards required. For those, Davis goes searching for the best possible home, and that has brought her into the orbits of many amazing people over the years. A Hollywood film producer, a realtor to the stars, one of the country's top sushi chefs, the director of a multinational footwear company, a lineman for the NFL. And of course, Simmons, who has now taken the role of sending Davis daily pictures and videos of his new addition, which he named Kuro, a Japanese word meaning black stone. To me, he's just Ben, Davis said. I don't know anything about basketball. I just care about the sort of home my dogs have. Her daughter Bethany escorted Kuro on the flight to their new home. She praised the airline Delta and its crew for making the transition as smooth as possible. The pup handled the cross-country flight like a champ, sleeping most of the time and playing with toys during a brief layover. A friend picked the travelers up at the Newark airport, and they drove out to Simmons' house together. His house is big and beautiful, but he's really down to earth, Bethany recalled. He had a few people there, a bodyguard, his photographer, a couple other people, all very, very welcoming and nice. Thrilled to meet the new puppy.
Stay connected to what matters most this holiday season with unlimited high-speed internet from DirectLink. While the holidays may look different for many of us this year, you can always count on DirectLink's reliable network to keep your video calls, Snapchat, stories, and photos crystal clear. DirectLink is thankful for all of their amazing members this holiday season and is proud to be your local internet, video, and voice provider for over 116 years. For more information, visit directlink.coop. And from all of us here at Now Hear This Candy and our friends at DirectLink, stay safe, stay healthy, stay connected, and have a very happy holiday season.
All right, joining us now are a couple of ladies who are involved with Canby High School Future Farmers of America, or FFA. We have Terry Cummings. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
And Patty Abel. Hi, Patty.
Hello.
How are you guys doing today?
Okay.
Terry is joining us from home, just looking like it's a dark cave. got that light behind you. And Patty, you're out down the world somewhere.
I'm doing chores.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks for taking a break to talk to us real quick. So can you start maybe with you, Terry, telling us a little bit about FFA and your background with it and some of the things that you do with the youth in our community?
I've been doing FFA for years when I first started teaching back in the 80s. But here at Canby, I'm responsible for the Living to Serve grant. And I work with my classes and we maintain the gardens over at the Canby Center.
Okay.
We've been doing that I was trying to think about when we actually started doing that. And they moved over there in about 2014. I'm not sure when they moved over there to that site, but ever since they moved to that site, plus when they were over at the Wilco area, we were working with them as well. So I think it's been since like 2012, I think, something like that. So we've been working with them since that length of time. And I've always been one to have the kids, you know, one of the motto is
living to serve.
Living to serve. That's the phrase I was trying to. And so I wanted to, I've stressed that with the students. And so that was one of the projects that we've done was with the Canby Center. We've also worked with Redwood Terrace, which is, I don't know if you know where Redwood Terrace is. It's It's a senior estates area down off of, well, behind the Chinese restaurant, mm-hmm. off of Main Street. And we work with them. We got those gardens started years ago, back like in 2010, and we've helped them for years. And then off and on, we've worked with the St. Pat's Community Gardens. We've worked with them a bit, providing plants and just going over and helping them. And then also the Baker Prairie Community Gardens. One year we went over there, the soils were depleted, and we taught the kids how to maintain the soils, and we got the soils back up going around. So that's kind of the gist of that particular project. It's been an ongoing project for many years, but that's the project that I think you saw the video on.
Yes. Yeah. Great video. We'll share that link with folks so you can check that out. Terry, your Zoom, you just look like you're in the witness protection program, and we forgot to change your voice. There she is. Hey, Patty, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do with FFA?
Okay. Well, I am the current FFA advisor at Canby High School. And so I do a lot of the leadership contests with the kids. You know, we do some community service, do a lot of parking cars. And I also work with the kids with their animals, as well as their projects that they have that are a requirement of the FFA. So I'm more of the FFA side, where I work with the kids for contests and things like that.
Okay, awesome. Terry, I would love to hear more about the Living to Serve grants. I understand that Canby's FFA has received full funding or full request of that grant every year that you guys have applied. And that's not something that's happened for any other high schools, or at least that's what I've been told. Is that right?
Patty, you want to answer that?
I can answer that. Yeah. I've done a little bit of investigating, you know, the Living to Serve grant, and I've talked to some of the FFA staff here in the state of Oregon, and actually, you know, some of the national ones too. And they've said that we are the only FFA chapter in the state of Oregon that has received the full amount every year that we've applied. Wow. And I think that's an honor. And, you know, that kind of shows that, you know, with us receiving the video and things like that, that, you know, what we do in the community is a real big deal.
Yeah. How much is the grant?
It's $3,000.
That's great. So tell us a little bit more, Terry, if you could, for folks that maybe aren't familiar with the work that you do with the kids at the Canby Center. But these are raised beds, right? They were built behind the center, and you grow food.
Right. There's 12 raised beds. They're 4x8. Plus, we have an area that's about 50x30 that we also put vegetables in, and we grow vegetables there as well. And so the kids, we normally will harvest in the fall, which this year, obviously, they didn't do. I got some volunteers to help with that. Then normally about this time, we would put in winter crops. We're going to let the soil kind of rest this winter with the COVID and all that kind of stuff. It's a good time to just let that area rest. The larger area, we have it planted in a cover crop for the winter. But we're going to let that rest. We'll take the soil samples in the beds, test the soil, see what they need, maybe add some compost. That's kind of what we would do. And the students would do all that. We would take the soil samples, take them into the classroom, they'd test them, figure out what they needed, go back, do that. Then they would choose what root crop they wanted to plant, and then they would plant the root crop for the winter. Once those were harvested, we would then put... And sometime during the winter time, we put poly over the beds and make them into small little greenhouses so that we can get the crops growing a little bit faster. Uh-huh. And then come spring, we would plant our spring crops the middle of March, which is early for here. But with the poly on top of the beds, it makes it so that it's fine. The temperature is fine for that. Last year, we did an experiment in the spring And we monitor the temperatures in the beds over the course of the winter to see what was happening, because we were getting much more growth in some of the beds than the others. Well, come to find out, it was the shrubs that were, you know, surrounding the perimeter. So this summer, with the help of the Canby Garden Club and student volunteers and some adult volunteers, some friends of mine, we got all of those, what are they called? I can't even think what they're called right now, but we got all the shrubs pruned so that now we've got plenty of sunlight for the wintertime. And so we won't have that issue with some of the gardens not growing. But then in the springtime, of course, the kids would start harvesting the crops. Once they come in, they would monitor, take plant samples, check the plant samples for nutrient deficiencies. If there was nutrient deficiencies, they would adjust the soil, the fertilization process, what they were doing. And then, you know, we harvest and they would weed and they just do the whole thing. And then when we harvest, then they also might have to wash the produce depending upon what it is. And with this grant, we would also put in a washing station out there so that when we need to wash crops, we can wash them.
That's awesome. What kind of things do you grow?
One of the big things that they like for us to grow is lettuce, because lettuce is, you know, lettuce goes bad so quickly that you can't really get it from the store. So we do a lot of lettuce. This year, some of the kids wanted to do cabbage and they grew some unbelievable cabbage. I wish they could have been there to harvest it, because it was, I mean, they were humongous. It was unbelievable. See what else we do. A lot of tomatoes, peppers, zucchini, yellow squash. We try and maximize as much as we can, you know, the growing area. So things that are going to grow and have a lot on them is what we try and do. So things that are going to be prolific over the course of the summer. But we do replant. So like on the lettuces past summer, I think we replanted it 4 times.
Oh, cool.
And I just kept it going in the greenhouse. And so in the springtime, like we started early, and then right before school's out, we would plant, and then midsummer we would plant, and then the fall we would plant. And so that's kind of how we would do the lettuce. I'm trying to think what else we planted. We plant broccoli. I'm trying to think and I can't think. Kale, green leafy things are things that, you know, don't hold up well. So that's why,
right,
because we can harvest them and get them out that same day.
Right. So my understanding this year, Terry, obviously things have been a little different or very different for everyone, including FFA. You've kind of alluded to that a little bit as well, things that you've had to do differently throughout this year. But I understand that there was still a lot of things that you were able to use the garden for to support the community. So you mentioned this in the video that some tomato plants were able to be shared with the community. Right. Quite a bit of food every week was able to go out to folks who need it. Can you tell us more about that?
We in our grant last year, we put in there that we wanted to give tomato plants out to the community. Because if you can give them a tomato plant and they can grow it, then they can have their own produce at home. So we thought that would be a good thing to do. And so we gave away a good 500 tomato plants.
Wow. This year?
Yeah, this past summer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll do it again this year as well. And because tomatoes are pretty easy to grow. And then some of the people that we gave the tomato plants to wanted peppers too. They go, you have any peppers? So we might do some peppers as well. Try and get those so that they're maybe do a tomato vegetable pack that we can just give out. And then when we harvested, we were harvesting, I don't know how many pounds, 200 pounds a week there for a while in the peak season. I mean, we would have crates and crates of food, and they were so heavy I couldn't lift them. So I knew they were at least 50 pounds.
Yeah.
Cause I can lift 50 pounds, but these were too heavy for me to move. So Yeah, so we were harvesting a lot of food. Tomatoes, we had crates of tomatoes and crates of zucchini and crates of lettuce and kale and chard is another one that we do, and chard. And yeah, it was great to see all of that go in there. We started doing herbs this year as well.
Oh, cool.
We did basil in the early part of the spring because we grew that in the greenhouse, and then we put that into bags and took it over there and passed. And I know I went through 80 bags one day because that's all I had. I had 80 bags and I went, I hope this is going to be enough. And I filled all 80 and it was just like, well, I can't cut any more until I get more bags. You know, I didn't want to just throw it in. I wanted it to be in, you know, something. And I didn't think to rubber band it. So then after that, we started rubber banding everything.
Yeah.
Putting bands around it. That was a lot easier than putting it in bags. So
Sure. That went out through the Canby Center, through their food share program?
All that went through the Canby Center. So we did basil and I'm trying to think what other, there was another herb we did too. I can't think of what it was off the top of my head, but we're doing herbs as well. And sometimes when we process those, we'll put them in we'll dry them. I teach the kids how to dry herbs. A couple of different ways. We have dehydrators at school, as well as you just use a brown paper bag, you know, and you just hang it from the ceiling. So I teach them both methods in case they don't have a dehydrator at home, if they wanted to do their own. And so with that, then we'll process those and put them in Ziploc baggies and put a little tag on them saying how to use it, because a lot of people don't know how to use the herbs. And that's one of the problems. I'll go, what do I do with this? You know, tarragon is one, you know, people don't realize that tarragon's in spaghetti sauce. So, you know, it's just,
I am speaking as someone that would be completely clueless as to what to do with the tarragon. Like what shape is that? I've never heard of the tarragon.
Yeah.
Patty, I know that you and some of your students have been really honored throughout the years as well. Can you tell us a little bit about your work, maybe some of the recent honors that you've seen? And I'd love to hear from both of you just about FFA and the impact that you see it have on students that take part in it.
Yeah, I can actually talk a little bit about, you know, when the whole pandemic hit back in March, it happened like school was closed down a week before our state FFA convention. And that's a real big thing for our kids because they work all year long on projects. And, you know, all of a sudden we're a week before and bam, we didn't know what was going on. And so they had to change some of the formats of things that we did from being in person to being online. And so we had several of our students compete in agri-science projects, so science projects that are pertaining to agriculture. And then we had kids who did their projects. And then our chapter also applied for some awards too as well. And we had six students who won agri-science awards, and they placed first at state, and their applications went on to national convention. My dog. And then we had one student who was first place with their project at state convention, and she won the beef production proficiency, and it also went on to national convention. And then our chapter was awarded the national chapter application. We got a gold award at state, which qualified us for national convention. And so that was back in March. And then the applications and things go on to national convention and their judge. And we ended up having a national finalist with one of our students with her agri-science project. And she ended up, placing sixth overall, I believe, in the nation for her agri-science project. And it was about biodiesel. And then our chapter was the only chapter in the state of Oregon to receive a 3-star rating, which is the highest that you can get on the national level. So we've had some pretty good successes. And those were just awarded back in the end of October.
Awesome.
Yeah. So we've continued to do FFA things, even if we're online. The students have adapted really well at picking up how to compete, on Zoom or Google Meets. They've been doing really good with all of that.
Yeah. Awesome.
So that's about it. I mean, we're starting up again. We have kids that are starting to practice and, get ready for the next round, which will happen starting in January.
Yeah. Yeah. The program and some of the training and I guess just being able to be together, even in this environment, being together, being a little bit of a different meaning or a different kind of word, but what is the impact that you see on students who are able to go through this program at the high school?
Well, I think it's important because I've been teaching and being an FFA advisor for, this is my 14th year, and I view FFA as a family. And, we're kind of a dysfunctional family at times, but I view us as a family. And, they have a place where they can call home. And even with, the pandemic and all of that, we've still gotten together, lots of Zoom calls, lots of, time on the phone or, sending out emails. They just have someone, an adult where, or even other students where they have interests that are the same and, they have a place where they can meet and, visit and, just talk and be themselves. And so it's kind of changed because now we're all online, but, they still have that place where they can meet and go and visit and do those kind of things. And sometimes we have lunch meetings where kids can just come and have lunch with the FFA advisor. And sometimes I might have one or two kids and sometimes I might have had, 14 or 15 kids. So it's kind of, it's kind of a fun thing for them to do in a place where they can, still have some sense of normalcy.
Very cool. What about you, Terry? What do you see from kids having the opportunity to work in the gardens?
There's just, when they're out there and they're working in the gardens, they take real good, they take pride in what they're doing.
Yeah.
They just take responsibility for it. And so you're looking at some lifelong skills that they're learning in reference to how to maintain and be good stewards of the land, as well as work ethic and some of those things that those employability skills, know, when they're out there, they have so much time to get this done and, they want to get this done. They're excited because I let them choose what they want to plant. What do you want to plant? What do you think is good? One student grew chickpeas last spring, didn't work real well in a raised bed. So and we won't do that again, but the kids just, they take ownership of it and that's real important.
That's great. Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out how to get my kids to help me in the garden. They just think it means eating as many berries as they can, but maybe someday I'll get them to weed. Well, thank you ladies so much for taking time out and Patty, especially you taking time out of your chores to talk to us. Anything that you'd like to add before you go?
No, we're just real thankful that, our donors and sponsors were able to award us the opportunity to do the gardens over there. If it weren't for them, we wouldn't have the washing station. We wouldn't have, we've replaced the raised beds. We've done, put in new soil. We've done all kinds of things out there to help the Canby Center grow their food. And it wouldn't have been possible without that. So,
yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Canby.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. So I'm a second generation broker and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. the first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
All right, joining us again. This is like our longest Christmas tradition on this podcast. 3 years running. Elf314, Linda Tate. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, you're looking great. We're doing this via Zoom, and you are all dressed up in your elf costume with your elf ears and elf makeup. How does it feel to put that on again this time of year?
Well, you know, actually, at this point, it's kind of an alter ego. I am elf number 314. So, okay. You know, this isn't an outfit. This is
right. 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 It's just leaning back into that persona.
Yeah. This is when I'm out in public. When I come home, I have another hat that I put on. It's my pajama hat.
So. Yeah. You hear the bells. Yeah. Okay. Well, other than loving the Christmas season, can you tell people why you do this and what this is all about?
Right. Well, you know, it started with helping support local businesses. So by putting boxes in their businesses, we brought people into the business and
boxes for letters to Santa.
Yeah, the letters to Santa. Right. And you know, it just sort of built from there. And goodness, now we're, you know, serving so many kids. Last year we had upwards of 180 kids. And, you know, this year's looking to equal that, if not more. And so they, you know, they put their little letter in the box and I collect them and I write back. And each of them are very unique and different letters. And so they get very unique and different answers. And this year we're actually, let me get him, we're actually including a little elf in every letter. So
in the letters?
Yeah. We have someone donate. Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
So where do you have the boxes this year?
This year we are at Cuts Force. We are at the post office inside where it gets locked. We are at Fisher's Supply, Nixon Cuts, and Mint Hair Salon.
Okay.
Also, there's one. We added Molino this year out in Roots and Roads. There's a box.
That's great. Yeah. And my favorite part, Linda, is that you you respond to the letters yourself by hand. Each one's unique. It's not a form letter or anything. What is that like? And what is that like this year, especially?
Well, you know, it's so funny. Every year I say that I'm not going to cry. Like if I get one that's really sad, I'm not going to cry. And every year I do anyway. My poor husband. And so, you know, that this year I've already had one where, you know, they had a loved one that passed away and, you know, they said, I know it's not in your power, but you know, if you could bring that person back, you know, I know.
So sad. You're going to make me cry.
I know. So I just kind of let it down and I kind of sobbed for a few minutes. But, you know, Santa answers. And then Santa also, in those cases, sends a note to the snow angels. And then the snow angels respond as well. So
okay.
They get a note that, you know, everything is well and they're in a good place.
Right. And I know your philosophy, or remind us, but it's obviously, you know, things like that, which are really heartbreaking. But, you know, kids will ask for things like, I want a pony, or, you know, things that you can assume, you know, are probably not going to happen. But Santa doesn't promise things, right, in your letters, right? That's kind of your approach. Yeah.
Oh, no. I always just tell them that, you know, your letter's been sent on to the elves and remind them that elves only really know how to make toys. So live animals, not so much.
Yeah.
Cell phones, not so much. The elves really are about toys.
Yeah. How long have you been doing this?
Gosh, this is our fourth year. Can you believe it?
I can't. No. I still remember when it first started, and there were the posts that would come on Canby Now that were like, I think I saw an elf in downtown Canby. Just walking across like 2nd Street. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's gotten bigger and bigger. I rode the fire engine with Santa last year over to the park. And this year I'm helping Kiwanis out with their 25. And
Yeah, you were surrounded by dinosaurs last weekend.
I was, and they were rope, if you can believe that.
Yeah, but that was great. You're out on the road waving to people, and people were honking, had your sign, donate toys. That was great.
Right.
Yeah. Are you starting to get kids that have done it before, have written letters before?
Oh, yeah. I started the second year I got repeats. And now it's like, you know, we really know each other. I had a young girl write in. She's 12 years old. And she said, you know, I'm going to still believe in you because I believe in love. And, you know, that was what I wrote to her last year. I remember her. And I said, you know, you may not be able to see me, but you can't see love either. And you still feel love and you know love exists. So as long as you feel me and you believe me, I'll still be there. And sure enough, she wrote back this year.
Yeah. That's so cool. Well, last question. I know you need to get going to head over to Kiwanis again for that awesome work you're doing with The Drive. But I just wanted to ask, have you seen or felt sort of a different flavor this year from the letters from kids? It's obviously been a really hard year for most people. You know, adults, we've certainly felt it. There's been a lot of challenges. I hope, and I, you know, kind of seeing my own kids that kids are resilient, you know, they handle things pretty well, but I'm just curious, you are seeing this really kind of beautiful and in some ways unfiltered perspective into their little hearts. What have you seen?
Yeah, actually I did get one letter in particular where they were very concerned about COVID. They wanted to know, you know, how we were taking care of ourselves and if we were.
Are the elves wearing masks?
And actually, you know what, Tyler, I anticipated that. And so I bought some mask fabric that has elves on it. And so I cut out a little piece and sent it back to them and said, this is the fabric we're using for our masks that we're wearing.
So great. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for your work, Linda. Is there a deadline for folks if they want to make sure their kids get their letters in?
Yeah. We'll pick up the boxes 4 days before Christmas.
Okay, cool. But you're kind of checking them throughout.
Absolutely. Yes.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you, L314. And good luck in the North Pole and with Christmas 2020.
Thanks. You too.
The holiday season is a wonderful time of year, but it can also be stressful. And 2020 is certainly no exception. If you're feeling a little overloaded, let the Wild Hair Saloon take family meal planning off your plate. Whether the current status allows in-person dining, the masters of takeout have you covered. Ask about their family meal deal carryout special, a double portion of chicken fettuccine alfredo, a huge Caesar salad, big enough to share, but if you don't, we won't blame you. Garlic toast and 2 kids meals with cookies for only $25. Plus, their mouth-watering prime rib dinners are available Friday and Saturday nights. Open Monday through Friday, 11 to 8 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, 3 to 8. Visit thewildhairsaloon.net or call to order 503-651-4273.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.